Hello, and welcome to Whole Food Plant-Based Nutrition. This is your volunteer programmer, Barbara Felix, from the Sun Sounds of Arizona Studios. At Whole Food Plant-Based Nutrition, we would like to offer you information to improve your health by considering various lifestyle options. Our articles come from different sources, which we will always identify. The information presented is for educational and entertainment purposes only and is not intended to replace the advice of your medical doctor or other healthcare professional with whom you consult. Here are some articles on whole food plant-based nutrition. And the first one comes from Healthy World Sedona, their February newsletter. Food for Thought, Hearts by Bev Bow. February is National Heart Month, designated by President Lyndon Johnson to call attention to our number one killer, heart disease, and encourage Americans to adopt heart-healthy lifestyles to reverse this. I was struck when I looked at the American Heart Association website promoting Heart Month that the lead banner encouraged folks to learn CPR in honor of Heart Month. While knowing CPR is a good thing, enabling the dramatic rescue of someone having a heart attack, it has nothing to do with adopting a heart-healthy lifestyle. As a culture, we seem to be much more attracted to mopping up the floor from an overflowing sink than to turning off the faucet. While it seems like there is confusion about what is heart-healthy, often created intentionally by moneyed interests, it's not complicated. Eat lots of fruits, vegetables, legumes, whole grains, with some nuts and seeds. Avoid animal products and highly refined processed foods high in salt, sugar, and fat. Exercise, manage stress, get good sleep, engage with others in a supportive way. These are the five factors that are the focus of our Healthy World Vitality Plan. It's not as dramatic as a CPR rescue. No one has yet made a TV series about living this kind of life, but it allows for the kind of health and energy to create fun and excitement in the ways that we choose. You may feel left out when all of your friends are reciting their latest hospital experience or drug regime, but that's okay. That's known as JOMO, the joy of missing out, coined by December's plant-based story interviewee, Christine Cook Mania. Our physical heart is truly remarkable, beating 100,000 times a day, over 2.5 billion times in a lifetime. It's a sign of a new life in the womb, heard through a doctor's stethoscope. It is the absent pulse that tells us a loved one has died. If researchers use stem cells to create heart muscle cells in a petri dish, the cells automatically begin to beat in a synchronous rhythm. But the heart is so much more to us than a physical organ. It is, in many ways, the emotional center for our deepest and most profound feelings. We know from recent research that emotional reactions happen largely in the gut and brain through the vagus nerve connection. Some emotions do seem to hit us directly, like a punch in the gut or butterflies in the stomach or that sinking feeling in the gut when something terrible happens. And researchers using functional MRI imaging can see emotional responses in the brain. But for me at least, I don't feel emotions in my head. I feel them in my body and often in the region of my heart. There are physical reasons for this. Stress and excitement cause our heart and blood pressure to increase. Chronic stress damages our blood vessels and can even cause broken heart syndrome, which temporarily stuns the heart muscle, mimicking a heart attack. A touching movie, seeing a newborn baby or baby animal, or a hug from a loved one floods us with hormones like oxytocin, dopamine, and serotonin, which lower the stress hormones, reduce blood pressure, and strengthen our immune systems. Our language gives the heart a more central role in emotional life. We tell heartwarming stories, become sick at heart, are hard or soft-hearted, open-hearted, disheartened, and broken-hearted. We ask people to have a heart, and we say, "Bless your heart," out of gratitude. The heart is the second most commonly used emoji in our text messages. During this month of February and throughout the year, let us commit to being kind-hearted to others of all species and kind to ourselves and to our own precious hearts through how we eat and live. With heartfelt gratitude to all of our readers, happy February. You're listening to Whole Food Plant-Based Nutrition, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona. Up next is nutritionfacts.org, and our article is entitled, "Which Ultra-Processed Foods Are the Worst in Driving the Association with Death and Disease?" by Michael Greger, MD, Monday, February 2nd, 2026. Even a small increase in the consumption of ultra-processed foods is associated with an increased risk of developing several diseases. And for each additional daily serving, the risk of dying prematurely may increase by 2%. Are there any babies we'd be throwing out with the bathwater if we avoided ultra-processed foods? Are there any that haven't been associated with disease? It's such a big category. What we need are studies to break it down. So here we go. The Framingham Offspring Study. Higher consumption of ultra-processed foods is associated with increased risk of cardiovascular disease. But was it because of the burgers or the bagels? The link between ultra-processed foods and disease was largely driven by the ultra-processed meat. The sausage, bologna, salami, hot dogs, and burgers. Breakfast cereals, nearly all of which are ultra-processed, were associated with lower risk, presumably because cereal eaters were eating less bacon and eggs. In another U.S. study, this one 30 times larger, researchers came to the same conclusion. The more ultra-processed, the more cardiovascular disease. But which ultra-processed foods? Soft drinks, both regular and diet, meat, specifically burgers, fried chicken, fried fish, and meat pizza, salty snacks like corn chips and potato chips, and candy. Ultra-processed food consumption and high blood pressure driven mostly by soda and meat. If we excluded soda and meat, there would still be an association between ultra-processed foods. Would there still be an association between ultra-processed foods and cardiovascular disease? We can turn to the three big Harvard cohorts, 200,000 people followed for decades. And yes, total intake of ultra-processed foods is associated with cardiovascular risk, but that was driven by soda and meat. Sugar-sweetened beverages and processed red meat, poultry, and fish like fish sticks. What if we exclude soda and meat? The relationship between ultra-processed foods and cardiovascular disease disappears. So, nutritional advice for cardiovascular health should consider the differential consequences of group-specific ultra-processed foods. And specifically, that means soft drinks and processed meats should be discouraged. You know what else is an ultra-processed food? Vodka. So when you look at food processing and cancer risk, if you exclude alcoholic drinks, all of a sudden, the link between processed foods and a number of cancers becomes insignificant, suggesting that it was probably the alcohol driving those associations. Though for colorectal cancer risk, soda, ready-to-eat foods like pizza, and ready-to-eat meat, poultry, and fish may also be playing a role. For pancreatic cancer, the association between ultra-processed foods and pancreatic cancer was really more just an association with foods like donuts, cakes, cookies, and meat products. Diabetes. You can see the straight line increase in diabetes risk with increasing ultra-processed food intake, but not all ultra-processed foods. Mostly animal-based products and the pizza category again. What about mortality? Those with the most ultra-processed food consumption had a higher risk of dying from all causes put together. But it mattered what kinds of foods. Ready-to-eat red meat, poultry, and seafood products had particularly strong associations with mortality. The worst ultra-processed food when it came to dying prematurely in general was meat, poultry, and seafood. The worst when it comes to dying from cancer, meat, poultry, and seafood. The worst when it comes to dying from cardiovascular disease, meat, poultry, and seafood. The worst when it comes to dying from lung diseases like emphysema, meat, poultry, and seafood. The worst when it comes to dying from neurodegenerative diseases, ice cream. And the worst when it comes to dying from other causes, meat, poultry, and seafood. The bottom line is that the major factors contributing to the harmful influence of ultra-processed foods on mortality are soda and processed meat, including poultry and fish. That's what a systemic review and meta-analysis of all such studies showed. Higher mortality associated with drinking more sugar-sweetened beverages like soda, including diet soda, and eating more processed meat or eating any processed meat at all. So, the ultra-processed foods problem may really just be a soda and meat problem. There was one ray of sunshine in this study, though. The researchers found one ultra-processed dessert that was associated with lower mortality: dark chocolate. You're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona, bringing you whole food, plant-based nutrition. Next is an article from Evolution Health by Cyrus Kambada, PhD, January 29th, 2026. We've all been there. Post-lunch or post-dinner, your brain feels foggy, energy dips, and sometimes a sugar crash hits. Most people assume it's just normal, but science tells us there's a simple habit that can dramatically improve how your body handles food, stabilizes energy, and even influences appetite: a brief walk after your meal. In my latest blog article, I dive into how this simple habit can fundamentally change your metabolism, and it's easier than you think. I used to think that walking after a meal was too simple to be effective. Boy, was I ever wrong. Lower blood glucose elevations. Walking after a meal helps blunt the rapid rise in blood glucose that often leads to that dreaded post-meal crash. Studies show that even 20 minutes of walking after dinner significantly reduces blood sugar levels compared to walking before your meal. This simple habit supports long-term metabolic health and keeps your energy steady. Turn muscles into glucose-hungry sponges. When you walk, your muscles contract and activate a molecular pathway called AMPK, which mobilizes glucose transporters, that is GLUT4, to pull glucose from your blood into your muscles without relying on insulin. For anyone with insulin resistance or metabolic concerns, this is a powerful, natural way to control blood glucose. Timing and duration matter. The benefits are strongest when you walk as soon as possible after finishing your meal. Even 10 to 20 minutes is enough. Studies also show that breaking walks into multiple short sessions after each meal can be more effective than a single long walk. Your humble post-meal stroll is more than just a pleasant tradition. It's a powerful metabolic tool. By timing a short walk correctly, you can take control of blood sugar, digestion, and energy levels, all with a simple habit that you can do anywhere. Try it after your next meal and notice how your body responds. It's not just a walk. It's a metabolic upgrade for every meal. You're listening to Whole Food Plant-Based Nutrition, coming to you from Sun Sounds of Arizona. And next, from Forks Over Knives, an article are Beans and Whole Grains, Inflammatory Foods, by Will Buselitz, MD, January 13, 2026. Longtime Forks Over Knives friend Will Buselwitz, MD, aka the Gut Whisperer, is back with a new book, Plant Powered Plus, out January 13th. In the new book, the gastroenterologist and best-selling author takes a clear, evidence-based look at common questions and misconceptions surrounding gut health and plant-based eating. In the abridged excerpt you'll hear next, he examines what one such claim. For the last 20 years, we've been given reason after reason to avoid beans and whole grains. They're not ancestral. They have anti-nutrients like phytates. Lectins are the cause of our health issues. Gluten causes leaky gut. The result? We've been avoiding them. The average American eats just 2 ounces of beans per week, while consuming 9 times that amount in added sugar. And while 95% of Americans are deficient in fiber, 98% of Americans are deficient in whole grains. Is our avoidance justified, or are we being fed misinformation that's actually harming us in our food choices? My vote is for the latter, and here's why. First, beans and whole grains are jam-packed with prebiotic goodness. They're about as high in fiber as you'll find. They also deliver resistant starch, and they can be a source of a third type of prebiotics, which we are about to discuss, called polyphenols. These probiotics work together in a synergistic fashion to support the microbiome and shift it back to health. Second, the proof is in the research. We can keep this super simple. It doesn't need to be complicated. Do beans cause inflammation? Quite the opposite. Multiple randomized control trials, RCTs, show that beans reduce inflammation in humans. How about whole grains? More of the same. We have literally a dozen random control trials showing less inflammation when you consume more whole grains. Simply put, these are not inflammatory foods. That said, it's possible that our modern agricultural practices may explain the reports out there of people developing inflammatory health issues. Both beans and whole grains are often sprayed with glyphosate after harvest because something you use to kill weeds can also be used to dry out beans and whole grains. That's why I personally opt for organic. I prefer my plants glyphosate free. I prefer not to ingest weed killer. Some individuals have celiac disease, an autoimmune condition, where gluten triggers an immune response. If you experience symptoms when consuming gluten-containing grains, it's important to get tested. Common tests include a blood test for tissue transglutaminase, or TTG, IgA antibodies, and intestinal biopsy via endoscopy and genetic testing for HLA-DQ2 and HLA-DQ8. additional assessments like IgG and IgA anti-gliadin antibody tests can indicate gluten sensitivity. If any of these tests are positive, adopting a gluten-free diet makes sense. Even if the tests are negative but symptoms persist, especially if you have an autoimmune or chronic inflammatory condition, it may be worth trying a gluten-free diet to see if you feel better. However, a gluten-free diet isn't universally necessary or beneficial. In fact, research suggests that eliminating gluten-containing whole grains can increase the risk of heart disease and diabetes. So it's critical to weigh the benefits and drawbacks before making broad dietary changes. You have been listening to Whole Food Plant-Based Nutrition, coming to you from Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is your volunteer programmer, Barbara Felix, thanking you so much for listening today, and I hope that you have a happy and healthy rest of your day. And now, stay tuned for more interesting programming coming from Sun Sounds of Arizona.